You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. A bit later in the hour, we'll get an update on SARS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. But next up, it's called the home of Army Firepower. Located on 6,500 acres in northern New Jersey, the Picatinny Arsenal is the place where much of the Army's explosives are engineered and tested. And those weapons are seeing action in the war in Iraq. And now that U.S. troops have reached the outskirts of Baghdad, should they choose to enter and fight in the city, the kind of war that they're fighting will probably have to change from primarily an air and battlefield war waged from fighter planes and massive tanks to an urban war fought in the streets of Baghdad. Special weapons for fighting close combat urban warfare have been designed in Picatinny. And joining me now to talk about some of them is John Klein. He's systems manager for the Non-Lethal Combat Tech and Concepts Team, the Light Armaments Division at the Close Combat Armaments Center at Picatinny Arsenal in New Jersey. He joins us by phone from New Jersey. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Can you give us an idea, John, of the change in tactics and weapons that our soldiers, the U.S. and British soldiers, might find themselves using if they get into Baghdad and do urban warfare?
Well, mainly because of the high density of non-combatants and the goal of minimizing collateral damage, just like you hear with the precision missiles, they'll be and precision weapons, they'll be definitely focusing on the accuracy of their small arms capabilities in an urban environment. So you'll see a lot of small arms engagements, most likely, where accuracy is critical.
Let me give our number, 1-800-989-8255. Give us an idea of some of the weapons you designed at Picatinny that are seeing use in the theater over there now.
Well, there would be systems that, like the M249 squad automatic weapon, high rate of fire, small caliber ammunition system, M240B, that's a highly reliable medium machine gun system. There's the M9 pistol, personal defense weapon, M4 carbine mod weapon system, which is basically the main rifle like the M16 mm-hmm. you've probably seen many times. Other systems like a Mark 19 40 millimeter grenade machine gun, which you'll see in a lot of the news clips mounted on the vehicles, and also the ammunition that goes for all that, and a 40-millimeter M203 grenade launcher that's mounted mm-hmm. under the carbine.
Now, your title says you're a manager for Non-Lethal Combat Tech and Concepts Team. Well, let's talk. We don't hear much about non-lethal weapons that are designed and may be used in this war. Tell us about those.
Well, we've designed non-lethal capabilities, initially stemming from needs for crowd control and peacekeeping operations, meant to augment lethal capabilities, never to replace lethal capabilities. Soldiers would always have that right of self-defense and going lethal. But we try to design these for current weapon systems so they could have either lethal or non-lethal capabilities based on the situation. Some of the first ones we developed were for that 40-millimeter M203 grenade launcher. One of them was the designed by the government, Army Research Lab, and ourselves, was what we call a 40-millimeter sponge grenade. It's actually an M1006 cartridge. It's fired out of the grenade launcher, and it's a blunt impact munition for point fire against basically belligerent non-combatants, people that may be stirring up trouble, that you've used all other options to avoid a conflict, and then if you had to go lethal, this was your last option before going lethal. Mm-hmm. And that actually has been used in Kosovo in peacekeeping missions with great effect. We had another one that was an area fire, multiple rubber ball rounds also fired out of that and used in Kosovo. And we've also done versions of that for 12-gauge shotguns that were also used in Kosovo. So that's just examples of small arms non-lethal systems that we worked on and provided and fielded.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. And do you think that if and when there is close combat in possibly in Baghdad, these kinds of weapons might be used?
They could very well be. It's always up to the combatant commanders and the individuals on what's authorized and what they choose to bring on a mission. Those items would be available if they were needed.
Mm-hmm. We've seen lots of pictures of the precise munitions, the smart bombs that have been used. But I think what's surprising, certainly to me and I think to other people watching, was the extent of the explosive power of these of the weapons that are being made today. Are they being made more explosive pound for pound than ever before?
It may be just an overall optimization. On lots of those, I don't Other people have expertise in that area, mm-hmm. if they're using newer explosives or not. But I know overall from the combined precision and accuracy and optimizing the effects that the certainly the overall lethality has improved.
Is there a way, and we've seen buildings in this war where the buildings have stood but the insides are gone. How do you design a weapon that does that?
Well, that's what a lot of the specific engineers and technical community focus on. That's a little beyond me because I have my focus on non-lethal, but it's all basically just tailoring the design.
Mm-hmm. I read that the goal in the battle for Baghdad, of course, is to avoid block-by-block fighting within that city because that would diminish the U.S. military's technological superiority. Do you agree?
Certainly, I would say that in a close-in engagement where you have less opportunity to use your overmatched capabilities, it makes it a harder fight. I'm certain U.S. capabilities are still awesome in that kind of environment, so I don't know that I would say degrade overall. It's just for their overall capabilities, that would be the last resort they'd want to go to.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Jamie in Medford, Oregon. Hi, Jamie.
Good afternoon, Ira.
Hi there.
You have a very good show.
Thank you.
I would like to ask your guest this question. He kind of glanced over it, but I would like to know if it is his forte. How would he speak to these systems that he's designing now to be used after wartime, like in a peacetime paramilitary situation? Like, say, here at home?
If they would be used in the United States?
Yes.
That capability could be made available if somebody was going to use it in the United States. I know of no such plans to do so, though. That gets into areas outside me, like on policy and jurisdiction. Who that would be, I don't know, like if it's the National Guard or something like that. But I don't know of any specific plans to use things in the U.S. per se.
Okay, Jamie?
Fair enough.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
John, you deal in non-lethal and small arms research, correct?
Yes.
What is the ultimate small arms weapon that you're working on or would like to give us the parameters that you would like to design?
Well, the ultimate one that everybody, I think, would like is if we could have a truly tunable system based on the situation. Everybody kind of uses that Star Trek analogy where you could either, stun or go lethal with one system. And we're a long ways from that, but that's certainly an objective we'd all have to keep it light for the soldier so it's less weight they have to carry, but still give them full mission capabilities for whatever the situation that they encounter.
How about the we've seen pictures in the movies, and certainly we've seen some soldiers carrying radar scopes on their rifles. Do you work with those too?
Radar?
I meant laser scopes on radar. Where did that come from?
I myself don't, but that's one of the big advantages of that M4 modular weapon system. Mm-hmm. It has a Picatinny rail on it, which in a way is like a universal adapter, so that soldiers could basically go into a briefcase of attachments and modify the weapon for whatever their mission is so that it's optimized for that mission. And then in that case, they could put on different aiming devices, optical sights, or night vision devices. And that's like what you're referring to, I believe.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Joan in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Joan.
Hi there. This is a Jerseyite. Now, Arlington area, Picatinny Arsenal, red clay.
What are you doing in Iowa? I won't ask that question.
Why am I in Iowa?
Yeah.
Lord knows.
Anyway, Iowa's a nice place. Hey.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
It is wonderful, really, truly. We have about half of Iowa fighting the war right now. They mm-hmm. took them out like crazy. Anyway, what I want to say was my concern is I wanted to see him hit North Korea area first. I'm terribly, terribly worried about what's going on over there. Now, what I want to know is all of the great technology, and I'm listening and just overwhelmed with what you guys do. However, what happens when the helicopters keep going down because of the heat and the swirling sand and all that? What can we do to incorporate what you do with these helicopters? I'll hang up and listen.
I don't know if, John, I don't know if he works on helicopters. John, do you work on helicopters?
No, I don't. I don't know as far as keeping them from going down at all. We could only address the armaments that might be on the helicopter, so I'm sorry, I can't really help in that regard.
What? Tell us about some of the armaments in the helicopters that you've improved over the years, and then what were those improvements?
A lot of it was people, not myself, but in the division, have worked on the mounts and the interfaces for machine guns on helicopters, various weapon systems, and the ammunition that goes into them. And you can improve your overall hit accuracy and the reliability of the weapons and their firing.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture, an amazing picture on coming from the battlefield. I think it was in Basra. There was a British tank that just raised its turret and took out. The British had a camera on the turret of one of their. It might have been a tank, and they just aimed from had to be a good distance and took down a radio transmitting antenna with one shot. The accuracy and the straight shooting of that was just amazing.
Yeah, that's in another division, the heavy armament division here at Picatinny Arsenal. They work on a lot of tank ammo and all the precision that goes as far as the overall system, the precision of the ammunition itself and the weapon and the fire control all working together as a system is where a lot of improvements have been made, as demonstrated in that same kind of accuracy from the British tank you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to another phone call. Let's go to Jason in Baltimore. Hi, Jason.
Hi, I had a quick question. I know that both the Germans and the Russians during World War II have experience with urban warfare, and they designed like heavy armored units like the Brumbar and Sturm Tiger, and I guess was that the JS-3, whatever the Russians came up with. And do the Americans have anything like that for urban warfare in their arsenal that they would be utilizing, or are they just trying to make do with what they have?
I'm not sure that they have a specific organized unit for it. I know that there are various capabilities that could be integrated into armor units for that. Pretty much that gets into a doctrine and tactics, techniques, and procedures that is not my role. That's what like a training and doctrine command under the Army would decide on. We would just provide the armament capabilities that would go into a combined arms approach that you're referencing.
Is there a specific system right now in place, like a weapon system that it does, is designed that's similar to that, just for urban warfare, a heavy mech unit like that? Have you got like a weapon, like a broom bar or something, like a self-propelled gun or something like that?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, where they've had them in the past. There were specific systems like possibly used in Vietnam.
Right.
I'm not the expert in that area of what they might have for specific systems for urban warfare from a heavy mechanized standpoint.
Right. Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Good question.
1-800-989-8255. What about weapons that can minimize collateral damage? Do you work on those?
Partially, that's how we had gotten into non-lethal. You can always minimize collateral damage by going two ways, ever more precision in your capabilities and also complementing that with non-lethal capabilities where you may not know whether somebody is friend or foe, or you may not want to go lethal because the purpose of your mission is basically to have as much restraint as possible. And if you did use a non-lethal capability, you have essentially a minimum collateral damage. If you go with a point-fire non-lethal, you're not hitting anybody else in the crowd at all. And, in fact, it has been used that way where individuals who were instigators, after all of their means were exhausted, were hit. So the U.S. Army has that capability, and that basically after those individuals were non-lethally intercepted, if you will, then the situation went away, the crowd dissolved. So that's a perfect example of using non-lethals for low collateral damage.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about new weapons of the future coming out of the Picatinny Arsenal. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. How much of your weapons design has to do with computer simulation?
We're using ever more of that as we go through the development process. In fact, there's a whole integrated digital environment that we would be going to, and that would go from the basic designs that would look at propulsion and aeroballistics using modeling and simulation and kinematics of the weapons, going all the way to where we'd hand off to what the users would do, where they would do their force-on-force analysis, where they factor in the capabilities of the different weapon systems. So it's becoming, whole modeling and simulation is becoming integrated from start to finish in the development process.
I think one of the more interesting aspects of this war has been the accuracy, the smart weapons that are being used. How small can, you know, down to what scale can you make a small or smart weapon?
Actually, we're usually, since we work on small arms, we're the hardest ones to miniaturize technology for, but that's actually the next generation that we'd be looking at. Could you make small arms precise? So usually things start out in the larger calibers and missile systems and work their way down into the smaller calibers. So probably in the future you would see smart small arms.
And smart meaning a bullet, a smart bullet or something bigger than that?
It could be down to a bullet or potentially a grenade or things that are larger caliber like artillery and mortars, because they're just a larger size, so it would miniaturize to them first. And smart, you have different levels of smart, usually geared towards the accuracy. But another term we use also is competent munitions. They're smart enough for the job that you want them to do.
And would these be GPS, the satellite guided also?
They could very well be. I don't know what the current state of the art is, but getting that into small arms is pretty tough right now, but I know that would be an objective.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Stuart. Is it Bamstead, New Hampshire?
No, it's Barnstead, New Hampshire.
Barnstead.
Lake Country.
I got to put my glasses on, that R and the N together.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
Say, thanks very much. I wonder if we could get down to some specifics. I know a lot of people in the U.S. are wondering whether maybe 50 or 100,000 citizens would just like to march on their airport in Baghdad and occupy it again. I'm wondering what a typical response might be, and if they might use or be able to rig up something like water cannons, or in general, what would be the response to a peaceful sit down on the runways there by, say, 50 or 100,000 people?
What kind of non-lethal weapons would work in that situation?
Well, I know that if they're just peacefully sitting down, there's different things that have always been used in the past, and primarily it's negotiation, because any type of use of force is always the sort of the last resort.
Right.
And the U.S. is famous for as much restraint as possible. That question that you ask is actually always up to the commanders to decide what they need to intercede. You mentioned water cannons. I don't per se work on them, but I know in the inventory, MPs even have what they call military working dogs. So, you know, just dogs to control a situation has been used in the past. And any of the systems I've mentioned, if they thought something was getting out of hand, they could particularly use. When you get into very, very large numbers, usually one of the best things to have there is a show of force where you have plenty of people to deal with the situation.
Talk them out of it. John, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
John Klein is at the Picatinny Arsenal in New Jersey. He works on the mostly non-lethal weapons, talking with us about options to the commanders over there. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about SARS. What's the status of it? How it's spreading? Don't go away. We'll be right back.